Welcome to another episode of The Brand Called You, a podcast and podcast show that brings you leadership lessons, knowledge, experience, and wisdom from thousands of successful individuals from around the world. I'm your host, Ashutosh Garg, and today I'm delighted to welcome a very, very accomplished professional from the world of technology, from Tel Aviv, Israel, Mr. Jason Schwartzman. Jason, welcome.
Hi, thank you. Thank you, Ash. Pleasure to be here.
Jason is a data scientist and a business intelligence expert. He's currently pursuing a PhD in data science, and his expertise has led to multiple USPTO utility patents, solidifying his reputation as a forward-thinking innovator. So Jason, before we talk about data science and business intelligence, tell me a little bit about your own amazing journey.
Oh, thank you. So I started off my career in computer science university when it was still largely math and algo, back in the dark ages of computer science. Mm-hmm. I originally thought that I'd stay in academics, and I actually, in parallel, taught for many years around different universities in North America. Mm-hmm. But business interests kind of drove me into finance, into banking. At the time, that was sort of the greatest area that a lot of the high-tech world was. So I began into banking, and eventually I saw that I really connected with the algo and modeling, risk modeling and so forth. Mm. So then from there, I kind of morphed into ERP as a manufacturing consultant, traveling around pretty much the world in manufacturing consulting, and eventually relocated to Israel. That was around the time that mobile was starting to become more of an interesting kind of venue. Mm-hmm. But over the last 8 to 9 years, it's really been only data science and business intelligence. A lot's changed in the industry, and it's quite exciting.
Mm. And before I ask you any other questions, for a lot of my young audience, can you help me understand what is data science?
So really, data science is the whole aspect about looking at data and understanding how to visualize it, how to understand it, how to segment it. So really, let's try to, if I could digress and say, let's say what business intelligence is and then data science, because the two are really very closely linked. Okay. So business intelligence is really just the notion of understanding a business through the eyes of your data. Mm-hmm. And nowadays, it's pretty much very center-focused on data science. Mm. But data science itself corresponds to three areas that people use. Mm. It's called the descriptive side, which is help me understand and classify my data. Mm-hmm. Oh, this is a dog. This is a cat. This is a bad word. This is a good word. Mm. But that's really talking about the past, Ash. In the old days, we used to talk about, show me my statistics from last year, mm-hmm. the stats idea. That's all past. Mm-hmm. But data science went further and said, we want to do predictive. Help me understand trends and predict mm-hmm. the future, what's going to happen. Mm-hmm. And then the aspect that's really becoming that avant-garde side is the prescriptive, the idea of recommend. What should I do now? I know what was, I know what's likely going to happen. What do I do now with that information? Mm-hmm. And sort of that corresponds to that whole gamut of data science.
Mm-hmm. Fascinating. So you said that you relocated to Israel,
yes,
to pursue this in much, much more greater depth. Was this a decision because of the incredible amount of technology that Israel has, or was it because of the startup scene in Israel? Was it for some other reasons?
Well, I think it was a combination of those two. I had an emotional connection with the country and sure. historically, but putting that aside, that really I saw that this was an opportunity to be able to get deep into the startup world, into the whole aspect of what's going on here. I didn't really gravitate that much to the security area, which very often Israel is associated with mm-hmm. in security platforms. I sort of gravitated to this whole idea that you can take and run with an idea fast and do it.
Mm-hmm. That is true. And Israel offers some amazing opportunities for new ideas.
Yes.
My next question to you, Jason, is that help me understand how you use data science to make informed business intelligence strategic decisions.
Right. So let's sort of divide it up into the two aspects. Realistically, one can associate data science with, I want to understand what's happening in my business. I want to be data-centric, that great term that now has become so popular, data-centric. So what does it really mean to be data-centric? It means that whatever my company is doing, if it is a sales-oriented, if it's a service-oriented, if it's just collecting information, I want to own that information and see how I can make business decisions on it. Nowadays, so much of the market is transforming because of the LLMs, the ChatGPTs, that we see that there's this whole movement that now I want to combine what my knowledge is with the entire world's knowledge. Mm-hmm. That instead of me being so focused on, I know what my sales are, but what's the neighbor doing? What's mm-hmm. what across the world is going on? Mm-hmm. So from a business perspective, we're more into that prescriptive. Give me recommendations. Mm-hmm. Give me ideas. Give me new keys that help me go forward, go to market, go mm-hmm. better with the business.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. And in your opinion, what is the most challenging part of turning raw data, which all of us have, into meaningful business insights?
Yeah, Ash, a great question. And I think that really there are three challenges. Mm-hmm. The first is to have data owners understand and be confident in their own data. Mm. Really, one of the challenges that I have as a consultant out there is to really get people to be comfortable with owning their own data. Mm-hmm. What does it mean to own your own data? It means that you are comfortable. This represents you and mm. you understand what it means. Mm. And it's a challenge. Can I believe it? Where is it from? Who fixed it? Who massaged it? Who faked this data? Mm. And so you really want to have owners first and foremost say, okay, I'm confident this is real and this is my data. Mm-hmm. And the second is to have that visualized. Mm-hmm. You know, often it's just numbers in a table. We've got so many years of the Excels and spreadsheet formats that pictures are worth 1,000 words. And mm-hmm. by visualizing what's going on, it's an unbelievable exposure to have a person understand what's going on. Mm-hmm. I tend to use a Data Looker, which was formerly called Data Studio, mm-hmm. as a way of helping people. It's a simple tool, it's free, and it helps company understand their data. Seeing mm-hmm. is believing. Mm-hmm. But the third is then to bring in classifications, recommendations, analytics mm-hmm. to explain how AI made the choice. Mm-hmm. You may have heard the term that's very popular in the industry now called explainable AI.
Right.
The idea that you gave me a recommendation, this Netflix film I should see. How did you make that decision? On what basis? Mm. It started in Asia in general, and it's migrated to the rest of the world, as right now pretty much the leader in customer exposure is all of Asia. Mm. And how do I explain this? How do I understand what's going on better?
Very interesting. And can you share an example where data science has significantly impacted a business decision or a strategy?
Sure. This example that I'd like to give you is actually not so much of a positive one. I think I have some other examples that I could give you mm-hmm. after that are more positive. But here's a not so positive way, but I think that it really helps understand data science and where owning that data with those challenges that we just talked about impacted. Mm. Mm. A few years ago, I was working on a contract to help build an overseas company in America to Israel, an e-commerce based. It was an exciting time. The e-commerce was going to be data centric, and the CEO was, wow, he was out of the running forward to say, I want everything data driven. My role was to help ramp up the team, help mm-hmm. understand the data, and really in doing so, help them, especially the people that weren't so familiar with the data, even though that they knew their own business for 10 years, mm. To outline it and visualize it. And in doing so, I outlined a specific risk related to warehouse and SKUs, items that were in the warehouse. Mm-hmm. And I visualized that and showed, listen, as we proceed down this path, I'm showing that there will be a trend to do this and this. And it was not a positive trend. It was saying, you need to get rid of these SKUs. It's uh-huh. going to impact you significantly. Mm. The CEO did not take it well. All of his talk about data-centric and data science, he said, no, that's wrong. That's not my business. I want that. Well, unfortunately, it was bang on the analysis. And mm-hmm. within 6 months, the company was in a horrific situation. The CEO was mm-hmm. bumped out, and lo and behold, data showed it. Mm-hmm. I think really it's the example is not so much to show how it failed, but rather how we can say we embrace data science, but we need to go back to those challenges we talked about, Ash. Mm-hmm. We need to own that data.
Yeah. Yeah. Well said. Well said. Thank you for such a great example. But the other question, Jason, that is often asked about data is the ethical considerations when you are looking at data. How do you handle the matter of ethical considerations when you take into account analyzing and utilizing data?
I think that in our times, it's a critical point.
Yeah.
And I compliment you for asking this. I think that not enough people are asking this. Mm-hmm. We come from sort of the times of seeing the transference of explosion of personal data online, Ash. Mm-hmm. And maybe we're sensitive because of that. There are really two points to consider, Ash. Mm-hmm. First is the PII, personally identifiable information,
correct,
which is incredibly important to respect and protect, mm-hmm. both legally and morally. I don't know the specific laws in every country in the world. Mm-hmm. I do know that we all know the flagship GDPR in Europe, which mm-hmm. sort of promoted it for the rest of the world. You can't. You simply cannot allow personal identifiable information. Mm-hmm. And so you have to ensure asking those questions outright. Mm-hmm. Is the information that I'm getting got PII? How do I respect that? How do I protect it? I don't want it on my computer that then later I'm legally in an issue with protection on it. Mm-hmm. The second is even greater, which is called the IP aspect. Mm-hmm. Data now is the blood of so many companies.
Mm.
We need as data scientists to learn how to protect and control their own data mm. and acknowledge it as theirs. When ChatGPT first came out, there was an explosion of people using it until they realized, wait a minute here, OpenAI is going to own everything that I type in.
Correct.
So within a month, OpenAI offered the opportunity to delete your own data. Correct. And that was clearly showing the way to approach the problem. They said, mm. you know what? You're right. We better incorporate that.
Mm, well said. In fact, you know, I'm fascinated to hear you refer to as data as the new blood, because data is always now being referred to as data as the new oil, because that's where there seems to be a lot of money. And that's a great perspective. My next question to you, Jason, is on some of these new developments in artificial intelligence, ChatGPT, machine learning. How are they influencing your work in data science and business intelligence?
Right. So I think that the new generative AI and LLM business is disruptive outright in the industry. Mm. I'm working on it daily and working in it daily. In fact, some of my projects are actually generative AI specific.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't mean just ChatGPT prompts. I'm talking about actually building models.
Mm-hmm.
But I am much more of a positive oriented individual.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not so pessimistic. And so therefore, I think that it's disruptive in a positive way.
Mm-hmm.
That means that now there's so many checks, algos, models that are online and available mm-hmm. that we don't need to write a lot of laborious code as mm-hmm. we did in the past. We don't need to write some of the, the boring type of things that we used to have to write.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, that means that certain low-end hanging fruit will mm-hmm. disappear, those jobs. But I consider it more of a positive way that we're going to now explode the entire market with new opportunities to gain leverage.
Mm. Fascinating. So we spoke a few minutes back about the ethical considerations, but there is also the whole matter of privacy. You know,
yes.
So while these platforms have given the option to delete, but there is also the whole issue. And I find that the younger generation is very conscious about data privacy. How do you handle the privacy matters when it comes to sensitive business data?
I personally take a zero tolerance approach. In other words, that I insist on legal, business, and system practices in place before I even touch any data. When I'm called to a meeting for a specific company, and once you start dealing in data science, they sort of want to give you access to everything. And so I say, I want an NDA in place. I want and not because I'm worried that I'm going to do something with the data, but rather I want to enforce that psychology that your privacy is important. Separately is when I do encounter that there are data privacy concerns, and I have, because I have been in the toxicity field, anti-toxicity field online for years, I do raise that red flag, even if it's necessary, to the authorities where children or innocents are at risk. And I think the only way is a zero tolerance approach. It's the same way that physical concerns are when somebody is physically. I think the data privacy concerns and so forth are critical.
Well said. Completely agree with you. My next question is on some of the tools and technologies you utilize in your work. Could you give some insights?
Sure. So I think we need to acknowledge that we in data science and BI nowadays need to use OpenAI and ChatGPT. I think that right now the statistics out there in the wind are 92% of all developers are using some form of ChatGPT. I personally use the programming language that most are familiar with, Python, and I try to stay for the data modeling side on a PyTorch versus a TensorFlow infra for production level. I promote typically GitHub connectivity and Visual Code connectivity as Copilot. I think those are really the new trends. And I think that as somebody junior and young wanting to get into the market should continue to consider these like the keys that you need just to even enter the market. I also rely heavily on GCP, which is the Google Cloud, and AWS. As realistically, everything is cloud-centric nowadays, and it's important to understand the differences between the two clouds. And the lastly that I personally like is the Hugging Face library of tremendous models related to that type of stuff. Each project is its own, but I think that that sort of is the technical tools. I hope that's what you had in mind.
Absolutely. And in your opinion, what role will data science play in shaping the future of business?
In one word, Ash, disruptive. But with explainable AI tools and the techniques that we talked about, Ash, is that I can think that we can embrace the changes and not view it as destructive. Disruptive is not destructive. Disruptive is a change of attitude. One can approach it appropriate the change to in a positive way and in a growth way rather than in a destructive way.
So, you know, Jason, you gave me an example of a CEO who did not take cognizance of your inputs on data science. Could you give me another example where someone did take cognizance and saw the business soar?
Yes, I have a few interesting stories that are more of the lesson side of that that help you pretty much understand that, and really. In I spent many years working in online toxicity and building models to help protect children online. And one of the challenges that exist are in startups, especially that you see in Israel, is the ability to pivot. There's some statistic that you pivot two or three times at minimum. That means you adjust your business strategy two or three times in a startup to until you're successful. It's very rare that you don't. And we were working on a lot of visual models. And one of the challenges, you know, sort of is understanding changes to it. We were desperate. We wanted to save the world and save the children and so forth. And we had some tremendous success. However, to go to market, one needs to make money. And came along clients that wished to pay and said, you know what, I'm not interested in this particular sub of the market, but rather something else. And so we pivoted from models that were designed to help in bullying, rather to models to detect online toxicity. So bullying is a form of toxicity, but rather than dealing with it to the innocent children, rather dealing with it from the standpoint of the browsers or the hosting providers or the apps, and have them understand it and take ownership on it. The CEO in this case embraced it. And in doing so, we were able to make a difference to the market.
Amazing. So I have time for two more questions for you. My next question is that what is the one thing about data science or business intelligence that isn't discussed enough, but should be?
I believe that it's the education of our youth. We have not yet succeeded in helping anybody really at the youth level. That means both, I would say 25 and under, understand a data-centric society. How to view data, understand it, and process it. As we move forward, that the models are secondary. We have everything running a model. That what does it mean to embrace it, to understand it and process it? It doesn't just mean using it. It means, so it's like akin to having a society with cord phones, the old phones that plug into the wall. And then you suddenly give somebody a smartphone and you don't tell them what it's about. And so they look at it and they say, where do I plug it in? They say, no, you don't plug it in. You swipe. What's a swipe mean? So we need to give a set of tools and viewpoints differently. And starting at the youth, starting at educational levels, elementaries, mid-range, high schools, universities even. I'm involved at the university level and under, and I see again and again, we need to embrace that idea of data.
But I'm a little intrigued by your comment that, you know, especially people under 25 need more introduction or more understanding. Because one thing that I see with young people is that every decision they take is based on data. So even to select a restaurant, they will go and see how many reviews it's got before taking a choice or what the menu may be.
So that's brilliant. And I think that I'm going to give you an example that rather hits home in India a little bit, but understands the context aspect. I spent many years in NLP, which is specifically dealing with text classifications. And I write and read many languages, but sorely only really speak English. And in the process, the world of NLP, context is everything. So one time, the company that I was at, and unfortunately we didn't succeed in going to market fully and eventually had to close, we were engaging in an amazing company out of the US as a partner, a design partner, and they had staff that was effectively everywhere in the world, including in India. And there was one person, I'm going to call him Rohan, just for the name,
Absolutely.
And so Rohan was amazed at NLP. He didn't come from he was young, under 25. He didn't come from the data science aspect, but he came from the service aspect. And he really had trouble understanding what's so big about NLP. It's words. I'll just give words. So I said, no, it's not that way. So I explained to him in a nice joking way. I explained to him, context is everything, Ash. I said, one phrase in one language may have different meaning in another. Even within a language, we can have one country that says something in another. And by the way, I gave examples between Spanish in South America versus Madrid. But then I said, you know, Rohan, I'm going to give you an example that perhaps will be more closer to home. And I said, in Arabic, there's a word called haram. Now, haram means it's forbidden, not allowed. Most people in the world are familiar with that word. And if you see that in a sentence, you understand the context of it. Now, imagine for a moment that you weren't referring to the word haram, but instead you were writing the word harami. It has a very different meaning.
Completely agree.
So he started laughing. He says, okay, fine. I understand it's not word lists. So haram to one, harami to another, a very different meaning.
Absolutely. I agree with you. And my last question to you, and this is for the thousands of young people, and you know, 74% of our viewers and listeners are under 34. Based on your own amazing journey, and you said you worked in the area of anti-toxicity, you've been a data scientist, you're a business intelligence expert. What would you say are three lessons you would want a lot of our young viewers and listeners to take away from your own journey and from our conversation?
So I think that one lesson is to not be scared of looking at things from different perspectives. Most people are embracing this data science world, and they type in something and they expect results, and then they'll take it at face value. And including people that are in industry experts. For many years, I worked in visual models.
Right.
And at one point, we had an amazing visual model. And the rule was, give it to Jason to check. I had moved out of helping them build the models. And we had unbelievable team of quality, PhD level expertise. And they came one day and they said, Jason, we have an amazing visual model. It was to detect a certain activity in an image. And I said, okay, let me check it. And they said, no, you don't understand. It's much better. The confusing matrices, the accuracies, they're quoting me all of these wonderful statistics. And it came back and they said, you've got to see it. It's unbelievable. We want to release it. Just check it. I checked. It came back to them 5 minutes later and said, there's something wrong with it. Houston, we have a problem. They asked, what? I said, the activity is only being identified on the right side and not on the left side of the image. And they said, no, please, Jason, nowadays that doesn't occur. It's all done automatically. It rotates it. It's this, it's that. And I said, it's a problem. And I showed them and they looked at the code. It had been commented out in the actual code by accident. So at the end of the day, the lesson number one is, don't be afraid to challenge, to ask, to inquire, to look. That doesn't mean that there's necessarily a problem, but to look. So that's lesson number one. Lesson number two is context is everything. And I think that we mentioned that already, that the difference between haram and harami.
Yeah.
Or harami, sorry for my pronunciation.
Yeah, absolutely.
And then the third is the lesson of pivoting. In the rule of a startup, there's a difference between your ideals and go-to-market. I've seen so many of our startups, both in Israel and abroad, change their strategy or even tech to essentially survive. No, one moment you're involved in something and then you have to be comfortable with pivoting. Okay. There's the blue ocean and red ocean aspect. The blue ocean, if you're the only one in the market, go for it. Like your background of go capture that ocean. But if you're not, and in the rest of the world, which is not the blue ocean, but the red, then you have to learn how to pivot.
Correct.
And not be afraid of that. So those are the three lessons that I would recommend.
And on that note, and your three wonderful lessons, don't be scared of different perspectives, ask, inquire, and look. Second, you said is context is everything. And the third is be prepared to pivot whenever it is necessary. Thank you, Jason, for speaking to me about your own amazing journey. Thank you for talking to me about different aspects of data science and business intelligence. I mean, I think I've learned many, many new things from you. Thank you also for giving me such wonderful examples. Both positive and negative. Thank you for speaking to me and good luck to you.
Thank you very much. Great talking to you.
Thank you for listening to The Brand Called You videocast and podcast, a platform that brings you knowledge, experience, and wisdom of hundreds of successful individuals from around the world. Do visit our website, www.tbcy.in, to watch and listen to the stories of many more individuals. You can also follow us on YouTube, Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Just search for The Brand Called You.